Harl's in the house.
What up?
Welcome to the Interracial Drawn Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always...
Very white guy.
And he's extremely white today. Yeah. We are also lucky enough to be joined by our associate producer, Carl C. Money's in the house.
In the house like I'm on punishment.
Yes.
Is that being on the John's punishment? I gotta go sit in the corner and do this podcast. I'll be back in an hour.
I'll be back,
God
guys.
Dang it.
Exactly.
What was the super nanny? Now go in the corner and sit there and do this podcast in the naughty podcast spot.
I think she was British, but okay.
Yeah, she was.
I think so. In the naughty corner. I don't
the
know.
Naughty spot. The yeah. podcast the spot.
Corner. Yeah. If this is your first time listening to us, you have stumbled upon the Interracial John podcast. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can find us on our website, interracialjohn.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr at Interracial John. Again, J-A-W-N. If you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, we will read it here on the air. So get to it. And you can be... not very podcast famous and yourself. You can also...
Dozens of listeners might hear your review.
Dozens.
Maybe as much as 11. You can also leave us a voicemail. You can call 657-JOHN or that's 657-529-6377. And we'll play that on the air under 3 minutes. Or... you can email us at interracialjohn@gmail.com. And I'm going to give a quick shout out to the Black Ahu Tips for both our 5-star review rule and our under 3 minutes rule. But if you're nuts, we won't play it.
I'm liking Rod's new nickname, the Podfather.
Oh, the Podfather? Yeah.
Say shout out to the Podfather.
The Podfather.
The Podfather.
I like it.
Yeah. If we were talking today, if there was like a podcast, like you know how they do the coaching tree, like where the you know this coach had all these assistant coaches.
Oh, right. And then they became coaches and their coaches became coaches.
So there's the, like who's got a really, like Andy Reid's got a big coaching tree.
No, like Mike Holmgren has a really big one.
So if there were a podcasting like tree of like podcasts that like people have spurred to do, I think that's why he's the Podfather. I think the Black Eyed Peas would be the biggest.
Definitely.
So when you get in a podcast game, do you have to kiss the ring? Does he make you kiss the ring? Or do you just kind of hop in and go for it?
Actually,
you just have to give a big tip or something.
No, I don't think you have to kiss the ring. If I'm thinking Rod correctly, you probably got to like bend down and have him do the sword, right? Like the, what do they call that? When you
sword ratchet?
Knighting, yeah.
Oh, knighting, that's right.
Get the sword ratchetness out.
Sword ratchetness.
Can tap you on each
anoint
shoulder.
Anoint you.
Yeah.
All right. Shout out to you, Rod, if you're listening. Hey. As I said, our associate producer, Carl, is in the house. He is from St. Louis, but he now resides in a suburb of Chicago. He's a self-proclaimed blurred, a huge fan of cats, and also a fan of huge cats, as the case may be. He works in the tech industry, and, well, quite frankly, he's just a good dude, and this is his second time here at the Interracial John.
Do you feel that the line about cats is emasculating at all?
He wrote that.
I know.
He wrote that.
I don't know why when I think of cats, and I'm not a cat person. I have two dogs. But when I think of cats, I think of like old ladies, like little old ladies. Like, you know, The Simpsons where the cat lady was like throwing cats at people, like, wah! And she'd like throw cats. That's what I think of when I think of cats.
Yeah, well, see, this is the thing. Cats really align with my personality because I think we talked about this before. I'm a bit of an introvert. Mm. So cats are kind of like introverted as well. It's like, oh, I'll come around you for a little bit. All right, I'm done. I'm going to go just do something else. So that's kind of how I am. But I thoroughly enjoy cats, especially Mr. Napkins and Maya.
I'll just say, of the people that follow me and I follow on Twitter, if it's like, I love cats. Everything's about the cats. Cat, cat, cat. It's got to be cats. I'm cat-centric. Like 99% likely it's a white woman. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, Carl. Anecdotally.
I'm a white woman.
Nah, you know. I don't have the transitive property of cat association.
I have white traits.
Either cats are your personality because you're secretly a closeted white woman. I got it.
Apparently so. Apparently that's a thing that I could do.
Apparently, because you can be trans Rachel, so you
exactly.
can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we talked about it on our last show, and I actually was talking to mom about this, Leslie.
Wait, your mom?
Yeah, and she's listening to the show now.
This could be dangerous.
She said she listened to parts of it, and I was like,
Wait, this show or first?
Yeah, Interracial John, last week's episode. She talked to me today about it.
Yikes.
She's like, yeah, I listened to parts of it. I was like,
why?
Not why, but like, damn it, now I got... It's like She asked me for my Twitter handle one time. I was like, I don't want to give that to you.
No, I saw something. I made something. I think it was the Truth that posted it on Twitter, and it was like, when a job interviewer asked if you're on Twitter, and it showed like a guy like backing into a bush, like, I'm not.
Don't trying ask to hide. Me. Well, so moms, shut up. She's listening to the podcast, and if you listen, you know, she's at that stage where really wants to talk about like racial stuff a lot, like racial, you know, especially with me, because Leslie and I, and you know, our activism. So when I speak with mom, and I don't mind it, if she's listening, this isn't a pejorative. It's just frequently when we talk, that comes up a lot. So I don't think she had anybody to talk to about Rachel Dolezal. And she heard a little bit about on our show. So her and I spoke for like an hour about Rachel Dolezal. And I mentioned the show, or the documentary we talked about last week, The Little White Lie.
Little White Lie.
And I think it's just a perfect juxtaposition of how a woman can pretend to be black and not only have no problem, but get access, go anywhere, do everything she wants to, selfishly, went from, you know, being perhaps not the... I don't know what she was feeling as a white woman, but she sued Howard University saying like I was being, you know, prejudiced against me as a white woman, discriminated as a white woman. So she goes from that to being a lighter skinned black person who has some privilege within that black space and, you know, only got outed because her family's like, the fuck? What the hell? Inverse. This woman raised in a Jewish family as a, you know, ostensibly as a white person her whole life, but all throughout her life has all these incidents and places where people are like, I don't know if you're white. Like, they're questioning her whiteness. They're othering her in her own self-identification as white. And then when she realizes, and quite society tells her, she goes to school and is like, nope, girl, you black. Literally, she didn't check the box. She didn't check white.
And they made you, this is back when they made you give a headshot, and, right, you know, like a picture of yourself on your application. And Georgetown was like, oh, girl, you black.
They sent out like black student union, come to the black student, black caucus,
you know right, pre-school, whatever. And she was like, oh, shit, maybe I am black.
So society was like, you're black.
Girl, you black.
So again, the inverse is a, you know, someone who is the one drop rule, and you know, even the slightest little bit, you know, quote unquote, not white. And when her whole life, you know, I'll put passing, her family was passing her as white, but just felt very unusual and off. And I just think it's an interesting juxtaposition that you, as a white person, can pretend to be black and get away with all fucking shit all over the world. But as a black person, you even like think you're white for a second and the world's like, burp.
Yeah, not so much.
Not so much.
It doesn't work that way. Mm-mm.
Well, I had a chance to go back and listen to the podcast. What was it? The Ferguson? I can't remember the name of it.
Response.
Ferguson Response. And so I went back and listened to it. And Leslie, you made a good point about that. It also comes down to the experiences growing up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think someone made the point in the show that, you know, as you're growing up black, the world definitely lets you know that. I mean, whether it's subconscious or just, you know, things that you see in the media. Mm-hmm. So you're constantly getting bombarded with that. But she didn't go through that experience. She just decided when she was in her 20s. So, you know, she didn't grow up feeling awkward. She didn't, you know, personal experience for me, I remember having a conversation with my parents. When I was 5, I actually came home crying, saying, I wish I was white.
Wow.
I don't remember what the experience was that led to that point, but obviously something traumatic.
Something
that
happened.
Exactly. So, and for me, it was good to hear that because, and I tweeted you, Leslie, as I couldn't figure out why I was so upset about it, but I think that is part of the reason that
totally.
She didn't have that experience.
No.
And that experience totally shapes who we are today.
Take it the other way. Who you are today is those, it's the sum of
exactly.
those experiences.
Right.
You can't tease those things out,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what makes what she did so onerous. It's like she's donning a fucking wig and then telling black women what they should do with their hair and talking about black hair. Like that's absurd. It's patently
right.
absurd. But anyway, so mom's listening. She was talking about it. And if you guys didn't listen to the last show and you're still interested in the Rachel Dolezal stuff, we're not going to talk about it anymore.
Nope.
great movie as a juxtaposition. And I would say, again, the Ferguson Rouse Network podcast on it was wonderful. And it was. Not Junior. Who was the other guy that was?
Junior and William.
And
Dad,
William.
Junior Burchell.
And what was the guy that was talking about the consumption of blackness?
Like, that was Junior Burchell. He's amazing.
I don't want to say it blew my mind, but I posted something on Twitter about that, and somebody called it necromancy. Mm. That white people literally kill and then don the skins of and dance around the graves.
No, it's true. And they do this with a lot of, I mean, you see like, somebody posted today about like Aztec print in you know, sure. fashion yeah. clothing. And that's a small piece of it, but it is about taking that which is cultural appropriation and stripping it of its meaning and then donning it yourself. Yeah, I mean, it's a pathological situation.
Well, and the way Junior talked about, it wasn't just, you know, culturally, it was like supremacy is founded on and maintains itself through the consumption of blackness.
Absolutely.
Bodies, yep. Profiting, mm-hmm. you know,
all
everything.
Of the above.
Yeah.
All of the
it
above.
It was I hadn't heard anybody put it together so
yeah.
succinctly and in such a clear way. It really was like, I was like, whoa. Mm. Great episode.
Check it out.
Fantastic.
Check it out. All right, well, let's get into
let's
it.
Let's get into it.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So, one Hillary Clinton, you know, soon to be presumptive Democratic nominee for the next presidential election, took her you know, campaign show on the road, went out to actually Florissant, Missouri, which is just next to Ferguson, and, you know, had a little town hall meeting type action with the people there.
And correct me wrong, was it not at an AME church?
It was at a historic, not historical, but a black church.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And also was, yeah.
So just, we're going to set the tone correctly. Hillary. Presumptive Democratic, yeah. you know, nominee for president.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Has gone to a neighborhood right next to Ferguson, Missouri, mm-hmm. and gone to a historically black church.
Yeah.
And at this
the
location.
Christ the King United Church of Christ.
And this is 5-6 days after the Charleston Massacre.
The week after. So, yeah.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
A few days
okay.
after. Just to Sounds set the so scene. Far. Let's hear what she has to say. Let's just listen yeah. and see what's up. Well, here she goes.
Statistics like these are rebukes to the real progress we have made. And they pose an urgent call for us to act publicly, politically, and personally.
Okay, so far, this sounds yeah. pretty good, guys.
Not bad.
She's kind of on point. Can you turn her up a little bit?
That's as high as she's going to go.
Okay.
Very articulate.
She's got it going.
Did you just call a white woman articulate? I articulate. Love you, Carl. You can come on this show any fucking time. She's really well-spoken for a white woman.
For a positive.
Nice.
Let's see where she goes with this.
We should start by giving all of our children the tools and opportunities to overcome legacies of discrimination, to live up to their own God-given potentials. I just saw some of the young people attending camp here at the church down in the basement, and I was thrilled to see that, because that is the kind of commitment we need more of in every church, in every place, until every child is reached.
Okay, now she's veering into respectability automatically.
She's right on that lane of bootstrapping
going it. There.
Respectability politics.
That's what we need to see. Yep. Bitch, you don't need to tell anybody what we need to see. What we need to see is your ass doing something. That's what we need to see.
And this is tangential, but in my life, I wish I could get this message out. White people, stop telling black people what to do. Just right there. if that is the single thing you take away, I, as a white person, will never publicly in any form tell a black person what they should or shouldn't do, how they should feel, react, anything. Just right there. If you do that, we're good. Just start right there.
All right, let's hear Hillary, because she's not following your advice.
And I hope we can take that as a cause for action. I learned this not from politics, but from my mother, who...
Oh,
here we go.
This is going bad already.
Here
soon
we
as
go.
Soon as she starts talking about Miss Rodham, shit always goes left. I'm telling you right now.
Taught me that everybody needs a chance and a champion. She knew what it was like to have neither one. Her own parents abandoned her. By 14, she was out on her own working as a housemaid. Years later, when I was old enough to understand, I asked her, what kept you going? Her answer was very simple. Kindness along the way from someone who believed she mattered. All lives.
No!
Matter. Yeah, please.
Wah, wah, wah.
You know what? And I'm really glad you got this audio because I have a tweep, a recent connect, who's I like her a lot. She's great. And she's a white woman. And she was initially pivoting and saying, hey, listen, I've heard. I came out right away. You know, I saw like you, Leslie, and Janetta, and a bunch of people like, Hillary, all lives. So I retweeted a bunch and I had my own statement. And she said, you know what? I'm hearing that it might have been taken out of context and that was, you know, something her mom said. And there was an anecdote about her mom.
No, no.
But that wasn't a my, it wasn't my that mom wasn't said a quote. All lives matter.
Nope, that was not a quote from her mother. That
go
was
back
her.
And play it again. Play the mm-hmm. last – again. Rewind it 5 seconds.
Really? We just need to hear me. It again?
I do.
Yipe.
Along the way, from someone who believed she mattered, all lives matter.
Okay, that's a statement that Hillary's making in the context
she's making
of that.
That statement.
It's not my mom. Right. So she someone who said her life mattered.
Yeah.
All and in fact, if you take it in juxtaposition of the sentence and the construct she's done, she's talking about her mom,
mm-hmm.
and then says all lives matter as if white lives mattered. Right? Like her mom, like, really? We got to, like, you're talking about your mom and she was having this problem and then you're going to throw the all lives matter? Like, that's really weird. Like, all lives matter as I'm going to beat you over the head with it kind of thing is frequently a response to, you in fact, stop. I have never heard the fucking phrase, you only know the goddamn fucking phrase all lives matter because black lives
exactly.
matter.
Yeah.
Right? Because those women started the Black Lives Matter movement and you've been hearing it as a mantra. So when you use it, it instantly, again, white people, all lives matter. I understand that sentiment. You instantly are invalidating the mantra Black Lives Matter. You just, anyone should never, as a politician that wants any, maybe she doesn't want black votes. Maybe she's trying to appease white supremacist votes. I don't know what her strategy is, but if she had any black person anywhere near connected to this movement on her team that heard that speech, would be like, whoo, Hillary, no.
No, 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 no. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that whole Black Lives Matter thing because Alicia Garza posted yesterday on Facebook, this is tangential from the Hillary story, but seen in Oakland, in California, some things that somebody printed up. I'll read it for you. It looks like a search page of like, you know, like Google, but it doesn't say Google. It just has like an image of a search.
And this was that like leafleted on the ground?
Box. It was for people to, well, you'll hear what it's for. In the search space, it says History of Nonviolent Protests in America. It says this poster was designed by an artist in Oakland. Apparently, they're unnamed. Surprise. Who wanted to do something directly to help her neighbors. The purpose of this is to hang it in your window, your store or home. Seeing stores get smashed up in Berkeley and Oakland motivated her to make this. Oh, it's a girl. Here's to creative, nonviolent, that's in bold, ways of protesting and to do something that clearly says that, again, this is in bold, vandalizing our neighborhood is not okay. Then it says made in Oakland, and then it says PS Print. And it says PS Print generously covered the print costs of these postcards, which were designed to benefit and protect the small businesses that have been vandalized in Oakland and Berkeley during the protest. Okay. And then the other part of it has a photo of MLK with two hands up. And then they actually use the words Black Lives Matter.
Yo, for shit's sake on that fucking thing.
And then it says vandalizing small businesses helps no one.
Wow.
You know,
really?
So yeah.
And I'm just, we're here in Grand Rapids. I don't know if we've talked to you about this, Carl, but we're fucking around trying to get a house and some stuff.
Yeah.
And there was an opportunity for a commercial building. As soon as it was zoned commercial, and now imagine a board of people can zone whatever they want, right? Like zoned commercial means, I don't know, it's like, I guess some board, arbitrary, whatever. But as soon as that was the case, the number of things that changed from how much down payment you have to have, whether it's residential versus commercial lending, whether you can get a 30-year versus 20-year amortization, whether there's balloon payments, all kinds of shit changes. And at every single turn, every change, in my opinion, skewed it increasingly more likely to keep product commercial real estate in the hands of white people. It just inherently in the nature of commercial lending, it's local, it's who you know, it's about community, it's about having generational wealth to have significant down payments. Because you can buy a house with 3% and 5% down. You know,
right?
It's just right. The supremacy that is inherent in it. It's grotesque, and it's the
wow.
So when she's talking about small businesses and business, and you hear people all vandalizing in businesses. Fucking, that is white people that own that shit.
Yeah, but it's just this idea
yeah,
of
exactly.
Property over lives, you know, property over people. And it's so not in line with the Black Lives Matter movement. And also, you know, this is where one of the three creators of Black Lives Matter live. She's in Oakland. She's there, Alicia Garza. And it's just so disrespectful. Like, they've trademarked the phrase. They own it. They very frequently feel the need to flex that muscle because usually people are using it in appropriate ways. But it's like, who the fuck do you think you are? It's just right. So it's yeah. So shitty on so many
it's
different levels.
It's just ridiculous. Ridiculous. And that goes back to my first statement. White people do not in any way tell black people what to do. And that includes how to react to fucking state-sanctioned extrajudicial killings by police.
Yeah.
You don't get to
try that.
Yeah, just shut up.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ridiculous. So also in the news, Confederate flag mania. I feel like we almost need a soundbite.
No, we're not doing any fucking soundbite for a Confederate flag.
I don't know how much you've seen, Carl, or what. I guess I'll start with, what is your opinion on the flag coming down?
It definitely needs to come down. I mean, I did a little bit of research because I wasn't completely sure what the true meaning was, but after I read the historical, you know, context of the flag and where it came from and the meaning and the person that actually created it and what he thought as he was creating it, there's no reason why this should still be around. You know, you hear people with the arguments, well, it's part of heritage and history. And I'm thinking either A, you have no idea what the flag means, or B, you are completely racist and you're okay with that. So those are your only two options that you have.
And I think there's C, somebody who's racist and wants to feel that way and then couches it in the heritage. You know, and we've referred to it as willful ignorance or motivated ignorance. Just, you know, they don't want to know and care not to know, and
yeah,
that's just
exactly.
Fine for them, you know.
Exactly.
And
Go ahead. I was going to say, yeah, after reading it, I mean, I don't have the quotes in front of me, but whoever the guy was, something Williams, I mean, it literally said, this flag is for white people.
That's in his
literally
creation
said,
notes.
This is a white man's flag.
There you go. You know, my issue is the role of prominence it took in the late 1940s as a, you know, flag for the KKK, as a yeah. flag to you know, go in the face of integration.
Not 40s, it was later than that. It was the 50s, late 50s, early 60s. Literally, it was timed exactly
yeah,
with
the Civil Rights,
the
movement.
Civil Rights
okay.
movement.
So,
yeah.
you know, you should have none of this, like, all heritage bullshit. But I'm of a couple, you know, because I'll play this news clip, because a lot of companies now, big companies, yeah. Walmart and Amazon and eBay, are no longer going to trade, sell the merchandise with the flag on it. And
we'll play the thing first, and then we'll talk
yeah,
about,
all right.
about that.
Governor Nikki Haley, under pressure after the Charleston church massacre, has called for the Confederate flag to come down. This after years of defending the flag, and quite a change considering what she said last year.
I spend a lot of my days on the phones with CEOs and recruiting jobs to this state. I can honestly say I have not had one conversation with a single CEO about the Confederate flag.
Still, corporate America has remained largely quiet on this divisive issue. Boeing, BMW, Google, and Volvo, all with major business in South Carolina. Combined, they invest billions, bring in millions, and employ thousands in the state, lured by friendly labor laws and huge tax incentives. Yet, silence from most of them on the Confederate flag prior to Haley's announcement.
Late today, we did hear from Michelin, which has more than 9,000 employees in the state operating 10 different manufacturing facilities. They want the flag to come down and are calling on lawmakers to do the right thing.
My opinion is business is business, so stay focused on our business. That's all.
Business owner Vaughn Granger, who's had a retail store near the Capitol for 40 years, believes it's not appropriate to offer an opinion on the issue.
When it comes to controversial issues,
he has an opinion.
If you could see this Colonel Sanders looking motherfucker,
yeah.
Bitch, you got an opinion. If your opinion was anything but leave it up, you'd be saying it. So
I'm for real. He's Colonel Sanders in like sockless fucking like loafers right now. Unbelievable.
Yeah. But I don't think that he is completely off when you look at some of the big businesses and why they're doing it. So they're saying the exact same thing for different reasons. So if you look at like the Walmarts and Amazon, and I also read an article about the CEO of Salesforce.com, which is a huge multi-billion dollar tech company. They're saying the same thing. I don't think they are divesting or kind of separating themselves so much because of the ethical issue of it. It comes down to the bottom line. So if you look at like a Salesforce.com, you know, their business depends on really talented engineers. And I'm sure they have some locations in the Carolinas. So if I'm a talented engineer and I want to work for Salesforce.com and I'm forced to go to South Carolina, I'm not going to take that job. And because these talented folks are so scarce as a resource for these organizations, they cannot afford to give up their competitive leverage to some of the other folks out there. And the small business guy is saying the exact same thing. You know, people who enjoy this flag, these are my customers. I'm trying to protect my bottom line. So although they are saying it differently, I think they're still saying the same thing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I hear you, but I'm thinking more – it's spurious, the timing and the decision.
Right.
And it's almost like a red herring in my mind. Like, you know, hey, you know what? Don't worry about systemic racism, but we're going to give you this, you know, this win. You know, hey, we took the flag down. You got a black president. Woohoo. Like, racism's over. We're post-racial now. You got the flag down. Like, in 10 years, we're like, oh, but we got that flag down. And the timing, I don't know what the word is for it, spurious. It just... all of these CEOs, all these big companies, it's like there was a fucking Illuminati fucking supremacy meeting and like, we got Charleston, DeRay's in town, we got to do something, okay, we're going to go against the flag. Like they all did it at the, like, kind of the same time. Am I crazy? I don't know. What do you
think? No, I mean, I thought it definitely was like strange that it was all at the same time. And then also just the size of these, the size of the companies. It's like, you know, no offense, but I haven't seen anybody force Amazon, force Walmart, force all of these huge, you know, top tier Fortune 500 companies to react, because Walmart doesn't need to take a stance on the Confederate flag. No offense. They just don't. They don't have to. It's not going to lower their sales or increase them or anything like that. Same with Amazon. So to me, it's just like a couple of people called in some favors and were like, come on, dude, just do this. And then, you know, it'll look good. We can just, you know, shut these people up.
And let's honestly, I can't remember any other large entity, much less this many of them, doing anything until it was not only necessary, but like if you look at boycott action as a social, you know, like, does it work? Does boycott work? There's literally like research on it. It kind of doesn't work with big companies unless they can be shamed. It's not about money. Right. It's never about money. It's about the public perception of like, oh, you guys still haven't kowtowed and you're looking kind of like a bunch of a-holes. Okay, we'll change. Like, that's the only historical way that big, big companies have pivoted. And now you've got like 12 of them pivoting almost concurrently in the same direction with the same language without having that. That pressure didn't exist. Yes, there were 500,000 people that signed a change.org petition. Yes, people were talking about it, but
not 2 days of pressure. I mean, it's just weird to me. It's like,
that much pressure.
And then the other part of it is just like the ugliness of what it took for that pressure, whatever it was, to come. It's like, oh, so what you're telling me is that for the last, you know, 70 years, you guys were all fine with that kind racist ass flag being up there. Like, it's okay. It's no problem. It's not really like, whatever. And then 9 black people are murdered in the name of what the flag represents, and now you have a problem. It's like, oh, that's what we need to do.
They're still fighting it,
and they are. I mean, it's going to be up Friday for Senator Clemente's funeral. The president is going to be in there talking, and it's still going to be flying.
I can't believe they actually have to. They have to vote on it. What is it? 2/3 vote.
They didn't have to vote to take it down for this short period of time. They could have taken it down while Senator Clemente was in laying in state and during his processional yesterday, and kept it down through the funeral Friday. But they chose not to. And the thing is, and this is something that I was one to be like, leave that fucking flag up there because shit hasn't changed just because a flag came down.
Right.
But there is a significance to symbolism, and there is a significance to it, because there was a level of when you see a state like South Carolina or Arkansas, you know, where they're flying the flag on their state house. Because what that says to essentially everybody is that I don't give a shit what Washington says. This is our fucking area and we fucking decide what happens to you here. That's the message that they're trying to send with this, you know, huge gesture of racism, yeah. Like towering in, you know, it's why they name things Plantation Boulevard and, you know, all of these things that go into general societal intimidation and letting people know their place.
And I appreciate that.
And I say, take it down. Fine, take it down. But I really could do without all the white people in my mentions, like talking about how awesome it is. Oh, Sears dropped it. Oh, this person. Like, just stop.
Well, and not only is it placating, but like the flag is but one. They have a whole fucking like, not just the streets named Plantation. There's one with like statues, like Monument Row. Yeah. And they've got Stone Mountain. For fuck's sake, Jackson and Lee, like, you know, 80 stories high, and it's like Southern Mount Rushmore. And y'all, I've been to Stone Mountain. My sister-in-law, I love you. You live in Snailville, Georgia. That's right on the foothills of Stone Mountain. It's like right there. We went to the thing, and it's like for real. They got like fireworks and laser shows, and fucking like everyone pulls up.
You were saying people cry.
Yeah, dude. Like they take
like
their
when
hat
the
off.
South
I'm
dies.
Not, I'm not
they
even
like
kidding.
Get teary eyed.
And when I say it's a thing, there's like a there's
do
a
black people go there though, Drew?
I didn't
do see
any
black
there's
people.
A, it's of course, a laser,
not.
It's a laser
I'm
light show.
Probably not.
Listen. There's a laser light show, right? Like a laser light show, like boo, doo, like you know, Carl. You're in Chicago when they do the Bulls games in the stadium.
Yeah.
It's like doo, 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 like fucking pumped, right? Like laser light show, smoke, the whole fucking nine. And I shit you not, like Jackson gets down his off his horse and like surrenders the Confederacy. I'm not even kidding.
Wow.
It's like. Surreal. It's so you're like, okay, take the flag down, but like that fucking show goes on fucking six nights a week all summer fucking long. Come on, man. It's nutty.
Yeah, it's
that's
crazy.
But
going back to the point that Leslie made about the flag and showing that's, you know, kind of turning its nose at the states, I mean, or at the government, I mean, that's the legacy of the South.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole reason why we're having this conversation. They have that flag is because that's exactly what they did. So that legacy has been, you know, carried on throughout the year. So, you know, there's really no difference now than it was back then as far as flying the flag and what it means to them.
Yeah. And fucking mom and pop racists are fucking loving the fucking sales at their ConfederateFlag.com shop, right? You're like,
yeah,
oh, Walmart
exactly.
Doesn't carry it. Come get your Confederate flag. We still sell it.
So I just did a quick Google search. Do black people go to Stone Mountain? Nothing actually came up, but but a Yelp reviewer put something up and said, overall, there's lots to do here. She had other stuff in. If you live in Georgia, you should visit at least once. If you're a tourist, come check it out. There are many activities. Just check on their website for more info. And if you're black, I'm not saying anything or anyone will guarantee to offend you, but if there's any reference to its notorious past, be mentally prepared.
Wow. That was like a really polite, like Yelp review, yeah. Like do this. Oh, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say if you're black. I'm not saying it's going to offend you, but get the mental fortitude to be fucking kicked in the fucking nuts with racism.
Yeah. Be ready. Ready for the racism.
The Laser Light Show.
We had a double week of 90s and 2000s hip hop arrests. We'll talk about the lesser surprising one, which is Rick Ross being arrested.
That's lesser surprising.
On kidnapping and assault charges. Rick Ross and his bodyguard were arrested on June 24th for kidnapping, aggravated assault, and aggravated battery in Fayette County, Georgia. So that's interesting. His real name is William Leonard Roberts, by the way. He's 39. And him and another man, Nadrian James.
Now, wait a minute. All you dudes that really have an issue with Caitlin, you're not going to call her Caitlin, but you're okay calling Rick Ross? His name's William, y'all. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
If you're fronting on Caitlin, you better start calling Rick Ross William.
Thank
William.
You, Willie.
William.
Willie Roberts. Yes, let's do that. So it says that Roberts was having work done on the property he bought in Fayette County and got into a fight with one of the workers whom he allegedly pistol whipped.
Whoa.
Really?
Yes. Rose was charged with aggravated assault, kidnapping, and aggravated battery, while James faced the latter two. Fayette County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Alan Stevens confirmed both men appeared in court this morning and were denied bond. Ain't that a bitch? They'll have to wait in jail for a couple of weeks until their paperwork reaches the Superior Court. That's what he came fucking around in Georgia.
You pistol whip a dude. That's not a bonded. Mm-mm-mm. And you know, he's always got the towels. You'd think, like, if I carried the sweat rag, that all the time, I'd have, like, a cue ball on the ready. Yeah. Just, like, wrap that fucker in there.
So whatever happened to just firing people when they didn't do a good job?
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, he took out a Glock 9mm pistol and pistol whipped the worker so badly, he injured his jaw and neck. He allegedly got into an argument with his groundskeeper and forced him into the guest house bedroom at gunpoint. During the heated confrontation, he pistol whipped the guy twice, messing up his jaw and neck and chipping two teeth. Wow. The groundkeeper's jaws badly hurt and is now on a liquid diet.
Oh, my God.
He fucked him up.
Yeah.
Rick was not playing.
No.
And what was the work he was doing?
Just like groundwork. He was like fixing up like landscape.
I said motherfucking Boston Ivy. This is clearly euonymus. Motherfucker. Like, God damn it. I said perennials. Fucking perennials, motherfucker. You know what a perennial is? Fuck you. Like with a pistol? Come on. It's like landscaping. Ooh. I wanted these fucking on and off fucking lights. Fucking A.
Wait, you know whose house that used to be, don't you?
Whose? Mike Tyson?
No, 50 Cent, right?
Vander Holyfield.
Holyfield.
Yeah.
Well, the only pistol.
Oh, 50 Cent bought Tyson's over.
If I can afford a Vander Holyfield's old house,
yeah.
I'm not pistol whipping anybody.
No. I can at least pay somebody.
Especially some grounds crew shit.
And you got a bodyguard? Like, what's his point then? If you gotta be pistol whipping people.
The fucking koi pond is fucking dirty as shit, motherfucker.
Oh, don't mess around with Ricky Rosé's grounds. Keeping,
Rose, I guess. Is no joke.
He's no joke. The second
I said aerate, motherfucker, aerate the lawn. God damn it!
That doesn't work anyway.
I know. That's softball.
Anyways, so the lesser.
You know what I'm talking about, Kyle, right?
Yeah. Okay.
The more surprising, I guess, incident involved one Sean Diddy Combs. Let's hear what happened there.
Entourage, Sean Diddy Combs got a police escort to jail Monday. This after the 45-year-old reportedly swung a kettlebell at UCLA football strength and conditioning coordinator Sal Alossi.
For real, Diddy, a kettlebell.
Be dude with a kettlebell?
Take that.
And what was it like? I guess is Diddy like buff? Is he swinging like overhand with like a 5 kilo, a 10 kilo? Like how big is he?
Well, hopefully he was bending at the waist. Yeah, and kept his chest high.
Had the hip hinge.
Right, he was hinging. So snap. Hopefully he did it correctly. Right,
pivot properly. Snap the hips. Fucking hurt yourself with them kettlebells.
All right.
Combs' son Justin is a junior at UCLA and a redshirt defensive back on the team. The music and fashion mogul can be seen here, his hands cuffed behind his back as he enters the Twin Towers Correctional Facility in Los Angeles. No one was seriously injured in the scuffle, but Combs was arrested at the university's Acosta Athletic Training Complex for assault. He was later transferred to the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. The university later upped the charges to 3 counts of assault with a deadly weapon, 1 count of making terrorist threats, and 1 count of battery. Combs' camp, however, expects the charges will be dropped. A statement on Combs' Revolt TV website reads, quote, "The various accounts of the events and charges that are being reported are wholly inaccurate. What we can say now is that any actions taken by Mr. Combs were solely defensive in nature to protect himself and his son."
Because, you know, that's what I think. Whenever I see somebody, you know, working my kid too hard in the gym, I'm like, bitch, I'm going to punch you in the face with this kettlebell.
Right.
Is that what it was? He was working the kid too hard?
Yes, allegedly. Yeah.
The strength and conditioning coach was overworking.
Yeah, well, apparently the coach made some comment because Diddy was there. He said, I don't care who your father is. You need to, you know, do whatever,
yeah,
whatever.
And we're talking, first of all, like, I didn't know you could be a redshirt junior. I thought that shit ended at some point. Like, is there money changing hands? Like, he's a redshirt senior. You mean he just ain't fucking playing?
Right.
Don't exactly. Say a redshirt junior? Like, I've never heard that. Maybe I'm wrong. Somebody else is more into sports. I don't know. That just right there is crazy. But
what?
In terms of a helicopter parent, like by the time they're a junior at college at UCLA, I like you just know teachers and people like they're just done with those little kids. They don't want to hear the parents, the momagers. You just like as an adult, as an entertainment individual, he should know going in there is going to make his kid's life miserable. like whatever you think you're going to achieve success, like I'm going to make it better for
him. Well,
I
remember there was like a lot of hoopla because when Justin got into UCLA, he got a scholarship.
Full
scholarship for football, and people were like, you don't even need a scholarship, blah, blah, blah. Like people were talking shit about that then. So it's interesting to see it come full circle as his rich-ass daddy comes kettlebell whipping people. Is that a thing?
Kettlebell. I wonder how Justin's feeling now. First of all, his dad's name is Puffy.
Yeah.
You know, that's first off. And second off, his dad gets arrested because the coach is working him too bad. Mm. What is that going to do for Justin's social life?
Like, just stop. Just stop. It's kind of crazy.
That's not good.
So
yeah, not good. Not a good look at all.
Apparently, you know, the 99 and the 2000s are back in jail.
Puffy had a flashback.
He did. To that J-Lo incident, that nightclub incident.
Hopefully Sean's around somewhere to help him out with this again.
Get him to Maze. Somebody better come get him. Somebody. Absolutely.
I believe I can hit you with a kettlebell.
So I did want to talk just real briefly about this Dylann Roof arrest as we've gotten more information out about it. One, the video came out that showed the actual moment of arrest. There was a tip that came in. A woman called, the florist actually called and said she saw the car and the distinctive bold haircut and called the police. And so they zeroed in and arrested him. Might have been the most polite arrest I've ever seen in my entire goddamn life. And it's kind of crazy to me when... Every time they draw on a black person, it's like, well, we felt threatened and we thought this and that, the other. Like, this person has already killed 9 people with a weapon. You already know he's armed. Couldn't be more dangerous. He's already proven he will kill in cold blood with people he sat with studying the Bible for an hour and then kill them. But no threat, huh? Don't need to worry about that. They didn't even have their fucking guns drawn hardly. It's crazy. And then after they took possession of him and they did arrest him, he complained of hunger. And so they went to Burger King. He didn't go. The officers went to Burger King and brought him a burger back on a single bag of chips because that's all he had had. He'd only had a single bag of chips while leading police on a manhunt. And so his hunger, they went and got him.
Whoa. I want to make sure I understood what you just said.
Yeah.
They arrested him.
Yes.
He was hungry.
Yes.
And the police stopped by Burger King.
No, they didn't stop with him in the car, but they went and got Burger King for him and brought it back. I only make a distinction because people are like, he didn't go to Burger King. Okay, yeah, he didn't go to Burger King, but that motherfucker was eating a Whopper an hour after he was arrested. So let's call a thing a thing.
Let's do a different, like, get 100 black people that have been arrested.
Fuck 100 black people. I'm just going to stop you there because I don't even need to go to 100. Let's talk about one case. Let's talk about Freddie Gray, who wasn't supposed to be arrested or even stopped in the first place. And they treated him so physically badly that he died as a result of his injuries in the back of that vehicle. This motherfucker killed 9 people and he got a Whopper. Let's call a thing a thing.
I was going to say beyond a Whopper, let's go with people that don't get killed. Let's get people that don't get beat up or even abused by police. Let's just get straight up. You've been arrested, okay? 100 black people that have been arrested. Survey says, how long before you get fucking offered a goddamn fucking thing? A cup of water, a fucking candy bar, a fucking vending machine Coke. It's fucking 5-6 hours. They interrogate fuckers for hours. This dude got hit his way. A fucking Whopper within, like, was it 2 hours of being arrested?
Yeah.
Wow.
Come on, man.
And I keep seeing all these people making excuses. Well, you know, that's the law. You're supposed to ask. Maybe they didn't have ways to get him fed in the regular system because it was so high profile and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, that's all good and well, but they could have just gave him some bread. Like, why he got to get Burger King? I find it egregious that it was something that was like a treat for a normal American. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, this is where I am with it. Like, in my mind, I think about, you know, poor kids, black, white, or whatever around this country that were like, man, I would love a Whopper, but we can't afford that this weekend. This deadly, murdering motherfucker gets one. Come on. It's just crazy.
We know dozens and dozens of people that went to Baltimore and got arrested in acts of civil disobedience. They were treated in a variety of different ways. I know a white woman that was treated like, oh, I'm sorry, honey. You know, I have to do this. I'm only doing my job. Click, here, let me hold your head. Don't hit your head. Have a seat. Let me make sure you're buckled into this van. Unlike Freddie, you're going to be okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is how they treated her. Even her, in jail for like 30-some-odd hours, got fucking bread and fucking like lukewarm fucking powdered eggs and shit. Didn't get no fucking Whopper. Come on.
Yeah, wow. It's craziness. It's just nuts. I just wanted to mention it because we hadn't talked about it at all, and I actually don't want to talk any more about him, but I just thought it was really weird. And if you guys do go back and watch the video of the arrest, they're two of the cops that are there, he kind of walks, he's walked by two cops, and there's two more cops by the car, and their smiles on their faces are very, yeah, very creepy to me. They don't look like, haha, we got him, smiles. It's a very weird, like, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but it didn't sit well with me just seeing it. I've watched it several times just to kind of like make sure I wasn't like seeing something incorrectly, but it's really like creepy. So we'll have the link to the video on the show notes. You guys can take a look at it.
Yeah, well, see what you say. There's no amount of smile. There shouldn't have been any smile.
No.
So you're right, and it's a creepy smile. It's really but let's weird. Just start with smiling at that moment. At like, all. At all.
It's really weird.
It's so is barrel rolling into a fucking pool party, yeah, and pulling your weapon.
Let's really exactly. not talk about him. In other asshole news, Bobby Jindal apparently entered the presidential
wait,
race.
Wait. I have something for you, Leslie.
Oh, you do?
It's the GOP clown car.
It's the GOP clown car.
Yes, it definitely is, as Bobby Jindal enters the race. I just don't even know. Bobby Jindal's such a fucking joke. Generally speaking, I was on Twitter last night and somebody was like, don't worry about everyone. You know, no one's going to vote for Bobby Jindal. And I said, who the fuck y'all fooling? That nigga's not voting for himself. Come on now, people. Let's call a thing a thing. Okay. First of all, he put a special announcement from Bobby Jindal on his website, bobbyjindal.com/announcement, in case you want to know.
Can I just right now, if you go to bobbyjindal.com and you deliberately find, like, put backslash a bad link, his 404 language is like, your page is not deliverable, is page not found, hashtag thanks Obama. Not even kidding.
Yeah. So
thanks Obama on his fucking 404 right. page. Fuck this.
So
guy.
In his special announcement, he says, my name is Bobby Jindal and I'm running for president of the United States. There were three people, I think you would agree, my wife Supriya and I had to tell first. So his actual announcement is a GoPro mounted video in a tree in his backyard telling his children that oh he's running.
It's like fucking found footage.
That's right. Like very well, right? Okay, so mommy and daddy wanted to talk to me. Now, so you remember the question you asked me last night? What did you ask me? Mommy and daddy have been thinking and praying about this a lot. I know you've been hearing about it. We wanted to talk to you first. So we haven't talked to mommy, or big daddy, or poppy, or grandma, okay? We're going to talk to you first, and then you can't go tell your friends. You can't go tell everybody at baseball tomorrow, right? I'm not going to tell everybody at soccer tomorrow, right? So mommy and daddy have been thinking and talking a lot about it.
Hold up, I'm stopping here because so much of this is like so staged. It's like, what did you ask me last night? And then he's like, names Big Daddy. Mama, like, what was he trying to convey here? And then he's like, my one son plays soccer. The other one plays baseball. Like, he's like going through, it's so bad.
I said it's like found footage from those fucking,
Blair Witch movies.
No, what is this? There's like seven of them. The one I made you watch.
Oh, God, yeah.
Paranormal Activity. It's filmed like a Paranormal Activity. It's like a funny angle. There's like a fan in the foreground.
You can't even see him. There's a tree. Birds. There's a tree, honestly, and it's blocking his head.
It's so bad. Okay, it's bizarre.
I'm gonna keep going. It's only a minute.
Okay, so mommy and daddy have been thinking and praying about this a lot. I know you've been hearing about this. That's good. So, so was that a surprise, or did you pretty much expect that?
The beans.
You and Sally already figured it out?
I knew that you were going to talk to us about this.
Well, we wanted to talk to you first. Now, things are going to change a little bit. So, we're going to be busy, obviously, this year, as you're traveling. Maybe you'll get a chance, if you behave, to go back to Iowa. Would you like that?
Just stop it. Just stop like it. Stop it. Really? He's literally referencing Iowa. Stop it. It's so scripted. Maybe you'll get a chance to go to Iowa.
That was the first big video. It's only got, I just want to tell you, it only has 190,000 views. It's pretty sad. And then he posts a whole bunch more. I guess his daughter, cut to the chase, she wants a puppy. I think that Obama.
Listen, the title of that video already is puppy. The title of the next one, look a turtle.
Look a turtle.
That's the title.
Keeping the attention of an 8-year-old could be hard, even when your family had a family talk. Okay. An important election for Slade. So one of his kids wants to talk about all the perks of being in the White House. I guess they have a couple of, they start counting votes. And then eyes on the prize, and it's really sad. I mean, one of these only has 600 people have viewed it, and I won't be the 601st. So
that should be eyes on the price.
But just so we all are aware, let's a couple of things you should know about one Bobby Jindal. Number one, Bobby isn't his real name; it's a nickname inspired by the Brady Bunch. Jindal was born Piyush Jindal in Baton Rouge in 1971 to parents who had emigrated just months earlier from India. When he was 4 years old, he asked to be called Bobby after one of the brothers on the popular family sitcom. Anti-blackness rhetoric started early with him.
Piyush.
Raised Hindu, Jindal converted to Christianity in high school after a friend shared his faith with him. Jindal would read his Bible with a flashlight in his closet, hiding his conversion from his parents. Quote, I read the words of Jesus Christ and I realized they were true, Jindal said in a 2014 commencement address at Liberty University. I used to think that I had found God, but I believe it is more accurate to say that he hates me. Oh, no. That he found me. Sorry, I read that wrong. My bad. Number two.
I hate Bobby Jindal.
He hates himself, Drew. He hates that he's Indian. He hates that he was Hindu. He hates everything about himself. So let's keep it real. He hates himself. Number two, he's a Rhodes Scholar and had a young start in government and public policy. He graduated just 20 from Brown University with degrees in biology, which is ironic since he doesn't believe climate change is real. And public policy, he was admitted to both Harvard Medical School and Yale Law School, but turned both down to attend Oxford University as a Rhodes Scholar. And he eventually studied health policy, again, ironic, since he opposes Obamacare, and eventually returned to his native state to serve as secretary of the Louisiana Department of Health and Hospitals. And then he was the first ever president of the University of Louisiana system, the youngest ever, just 28.
Oh, how coincidental that he's in charge of health and hospitals, which are overwhelmingly run by big business and HMO and PPOs. And golly, he's against Obamacare. Shocking.
Number three, Jindal lost his first run for elective office, but he has won ever since. So he left his role at the Health and Human Services in 2002 to run for governor. It was an open primary system there in Louisiana, as Drew and I both know since we live there. And so all the candidates are on a ballot, regardless of what the party is. In the first vote, Jindal topped the field, easily besting the second place finisher, Kathleen Blanco. But in the November election, Blanco won. Since then, he's won everything he's run for. One of his biggest moments drew comparisons to Kenneth the Page from 30 Rock. In 2009, the young Louisiana governor was tapped to deliver the GOP response to Barack Obama's first address
the Watergate
session of Congress. No, that's the other one. That's Cruz.
Oh, that was Cruz of the Water.
The Plum Post was supposed to launch him onto the national stage and buttress a Republican Party badly in need of diversity. What they forgot was there's nothing diverse about Bobby Jindal. Just kidding. That didn't say that either. But Jindal, normally a fast talker, looked halting and timid as he awkwardly delivered an attempt at a folksy speech. Both Republicans and Democrats panned the address, and some unflatteringly compared him to 30 Rock's bumpkin character, Kenneth the Page. Let's listen to just a minute of this.
Good evening and happy Mardi Gras. I'm Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana. Tonight, we witnessed a great moment in the history of our republic, in the very chamber where Congress once voted to abolish slavery. Our first African-American president stepped forward to address the state of our union.
I can't even.
His real name? Baruch? What was it?
Piyush. Piyush.
Piyush?
Mm-hmm. Piyush.
Yeah. Rhymes with douche.
And number five, he has the Duck Dynasty seal of approval. So there's that.
So did you hear about the speech that he gave? I don't know if it was earlier this week. That he is just getting massacred on Twitter.
No.
So he was talking about, so it goes back to his identity. He's like, I'm not Indian American. I don't think we should have African Americans and Italian Americans. We're just all American. And Twitter, I guess the Indian Twitter just went bananas. I mean, they were killing him.
Oh, so God.
The hashtag Bobby Jindal is so white.
Oh, I saw that yesterday. I did. I didn't know why.
I didn't get that either.
Yes,
I saw
that's
it.
Why. Oh, I God. Mean, they I are killing it. Him. Well, one I read is like, Bobby Jindal is so white, his name is Bobby. I mean, they were just killed. It was a ride. So if you get a chance to take a look at that, I mean, they just go in on him.
Oh
so
gosh.
Not only Indian Americans, but like Indians from India are getting on him too.
Yeah, well, I'll read the quick bit of what he said. He says, at its time, we stopped trying to divide ourselves against each other. Hillary Clinton is already trying to divide us by ethnicity, by gender, and by economic status. As for me, I'm sick and tired of people dividing Americans, and I'm done with all this talk about hyphenated Americans. We're not Indian Americans, Irish Americans, African Americans, rich Americans, or poor Americans. We're all Americans. While I'm at it, while he's at it, everyone, here's another thing you weren't allowed to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. We cannot allow people to emigrate to this country so that they can use our freedoms to undermine our freedoms. Huh?
Huh?
That's exactly what has happened in Europe, where they have second and third generations of immigrants who refuse to embrace the values and culture of the countries that they moved into. We must not let that happen here.
We will force assimilation.
It is not unreasonable to demand that if you immigrate to America, you must do so legally and you must be ready and willing to embrace our values, learn English, and roll up your sleeves and get to work. Like, what the fuck
and
are you talking
about? And take a
name
about? Like Bobby.
First of all, your parents are fucking immigrants. Second of all, immigrants are the hardest working motherfuckers in this goddamn country, and they don't make shit for it because they can be taken advantage of by people like your fucking people that are financing this bullshit charade of a run. No wonder these people went after him. Oh, that is just horrible. Oh, he's the worst. What a dick.
You know,
so how many douchebags are actually running at this point?
So I had to pull it up. I literally had to pull it up. And Carl, what's the over under? How many you think are there?
I'm going to say 7.
How many is it really?
26.
Jesus.
And
what,
counting. The GOP clown car is full of 26 and counting. I'll just read them all through. I don't even know half these fucking guys. Skip Andrews, Michael Bicklemeyer, Kerry Bowers. These are all people that have declared. Okay. This is declared president. Oh, and all white guys. Until I say otherwise, all white guys. Michael Bicklemeyer, Kerry Bowers, Jeb Bush, Dr. Ben Carson. Black guy.
Hey.
Black. Is he black? I shouldn't say he's a black guy. Is there the racial draft? I don't know. I think white people
We gave him up.
We gave him up. Dale Christensen. So Chris Christie's here. He's not declared. He's exploring. So I don't know if I should count Christie.
He doesn't count.
Okay, so skip him. The Cruise Master, Ted Cruz, Brooks Cullison. Is that like a comedian's name? John Dummett Jr. Literally, none of these guys. Never heard of him. Mark Everson. Here's a woman. Carly Fiorina, former CEO of Hewlett Packard. Lindsey Graham. And I do know he's a man.
Lindsey.
Jim Hayden. Chris Hill.
Who?
Mike Huckabee.
Just start naming random names.
Bobby Jindal. Right, Bobby Jindal.
Felix Unger. Is he running?
No, he's not. Michael Kinlaw. Let's see here. Oh, this guy's exploring. I'll skip him. George Pataki.
Wow.
Rand Paul. Rick Perry. Michael Petio. Mark Rubio. Brian Russell. Santorum. Jefferson Sherman.
Did you guys hear that story about Rick Santorum had a lunch event and only one person showed up?
No shit.
No way.
Yeah, it's like really embarrassing. And he's like, well, like, he got a good lunch.
Yeah, that's about it.
So this Jefferson Sherman, first of all, you're named after two Confederate.
Right, exactly.
Jefferson Sherman. One enough. Maybe your mother. I'll have to read his bio because it's a little bit much. He declared Republican presidential candidate and under the title, like Donald Trump's got business television personality author, like Scott Walker's got governor of Wisconsin. This dude, common sense leader. That's what it says, common sense leader. That's it. He'd rather talk about America's problems and their solutions than talk about himself, but he's got a lot to say.
I bet he does.
Jefferson Sherman has three core goals for his administration. Okay. Should it come to pass, focusing on job creation, honorable foreign policy, and reduced government.
All right, sounds plausible.
Hey, he has the shortest bio. He got the most in. To.
Keep going. You're not done yet, right?
Donald Trump, Scott Walker, and that's it. The rest are now potential.
Okay, so I will give the details of what a difference 4 years makes. This was from June 9th. In the 2012 presidential campaign, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum was the king of Iowa, or at least the guy who won it and put in the work to do it. He traveled to all 99 counties with his family and surprised everyone by winning the state's caucuses by 34 votes. This week, the 2016 candidate ate lunch practically alone in an Iowa grill. Des Moines Register reported that Santorum stopped by Darrell's place in Hamlin, Iowa for a scheduled 2 p.m. campaign event. Only one person showed up to greet him. Quote, when just one Iowan showed up to Rick Santorum's 2 p.m. campaign stop at a restaurant here Monday, the winner of the 2012 Iowa caucus made a quick decision. Might as well order lunch. I hadn't eaten all day, actually, he said. He said to his guest, Peggy Toft, an insurance agent and the chair of the county's Republican Party, end quote. A local photographer who also worked at the restaurant part-time told Santorum he should order the rhubarb pie. Santorum took the advice of his one guest and ordered the restaurant's signature dish, breaded tenderloin and onion rings. His food came, and the register says three more Iowans entered the restaurant and stopped by Santorum's table. He posed for photos, and yeah. So that happened.
I got to read one more of these. Michael Petio, he declared, he's titled Businessman and Veteran. And he put it in quotes here, a business first, in quotes, fiscal conservative with a very optimistic view of the role played by corporations in generating wealth. Very optimistic view of the role played by corporations in generating
he's
wealth.
He's like, I look at my bank account, looks fucking good every day.
Right.
So I don't know what the problem is.
No, it's like basically like everything's like, hey, corporations, if I'm your guy.
I'm up for grabs,
I'm here for you.
I'm here for you. I got your back.
Role played by corporations. Michael is himself a business owner who feels the United States has lost its way economically and that relaxed regulation on the private sector is the solution.
Oh.
Even so, there was a hey, there's a calling card. I'm your guy, and then it's like, psst,
relaxed regulations is the problem, dudes. Yeah,
close the EPA.
Get rid of all that shit. Come on,
all those pesky greenhouse gas laws. Fuck that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So yeah, the clown car is full.
It's not. I'm sure it's not completely full because there'll be more assholes coming out.
They always get thinned out in Iowa in the first two caucuses. But
we'll see. Santorum's still in it. One dude showed up last week, so
Lord.
I don't know what it takes.
True. Good Lord. Let's move on. And it might be better. It might not be. Whoa! Record scratch.
Oh, record scratch. That usually means.
So it is Yes All Cops, but there's a former Baltimore police officer who has come clean about corruption on the force. Michael A. Wood Jr., now follow him on Twitter, Michael A. Wood Jr., and I'd say an epic series of tweets really came clean. And I'll just read a few. So he goes, I'm going to start tweeting the things I've seen and participated in policing that is corrupt, intentional or not. A detective slapping a completely innocent female in the face for bumping into him coming out of a chicken store. Punting a handcuffed face-down suspect in the face after a foot chase. My handcuffs, not my boot or suspect. Closed camera TV cameras turning as soon as a suspect is close to being caught.
Mm.
Pissing and shitting in a suspect's home during a raid. On their clothes and in their beds. Jacking up and illegally searching thousands of people with no justification. Having other people write PC statements who are never there because they could twist it into legality. Wow. Just falsifying statements. Summoning officers who weren't there so they could collect the overtime.
Wow.
Targeting 16 to 24-year-old black males essentially because we arrest them more, perpetuating the cycle of arresting them more.
Mm.
Mm.
So there was an update on that. Detective Rashawn Strong, a spokesperson with the Baltimore Police Department, responded by email to HuffPost's inquiries. He says, the recent allegations made by Mr. Michael Wood are serious and very troubling. The police commissioner has made clear that the Baltimore Police Department will never tolerate malicious conduct. Really? Have they made that clear? Okay. We hope that during his time as both a sworn member and a sergeant with supervisory obligations that Mr. Wood reported these disturbing allegations at the time of their occurrence. Oh, so it's his fault now. Okay.
There we go.
If he did not, we strongly encourage him to do so now so that our internal investigations division can begin an immediate investigation. In a recently published letter to the Baltimore Sun, the police commissioner made clear that his reform efforts remain focused on rooting out the type of conduct that is alleged. We implore Mr. Wood or anyone else with knowledge of such acts to contact our internal affairs division, and he leaves a phone number for them to do so.
He's done four additional interviews. He's not taking any money on it, and he wants to fix policing. He's not about me. He's just trying to get stuff out. And he's going to do his next series of tweets is going to be more about internal corruption and showing some of the deplorable ways in which police are treated by the command and the city.
Well, it's very interesting that they say
I'm sure there's
that,
a book coming. No
yes,
disrespect.
Oh, yeah.
It's very interesting that they say that they're trying to root all these things out. But if you all recall, during right after Freddie Gray's death, there was this you know, the police came out and said they had a credible threat that the Bloods, Crips, and Black Guerrilla had teamed up to target their officers. You remember? Do you guys remember that?
Very much.
I do, yeah.
Well, you know, the federal government has investigated and found that there was never a credible threat. In fact, it was quite not credible and very clear.
In fact, it was the FBI that came up with that.
That's what I said, the federal government.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which is very interesting that they claim that they want to root out all this stuff, and then they themselves are doing this type of stuff, lying.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to see how long it's going to take before they start to defame this guy.
If he chirps long enough,
I give him a good week or two.
They started already with that statement. Well, he was the supervisor. He could have said something, just saying.
That's true. That's true.
They're already starting.
Wow. It's a bit crazy.
For sure.
It's a bit crazy. So, I don't know if we talked about this, Carl, but are you ready?
I'm ready. I don't know if you guys saw this, but our guy Obese, keeping it real. It was a podcast that he did a couple of days ago, and he was talking about race in general in America and what it looks like and what it doesn't look like. And he used the N-word.
Ooh, he dropped the N-bomb. You know, in fact, I think I have. I have the audio queued up. Let me get.
Let's take a listen to that.
Let's see. Of slavery, Jim Crow, discrimination in almost every institution of our lives. You know, that casts a long shadow. And that's still part of our DNA. That's passed on. We're not cured of it.
Racism.
We are not cured of.
Clearly.
And it's not just a matter of it not being polite to say nigger in public. That's not the measure of whether racism still exists or not. Societies don't overnight completely erase everything that happened 200 to 300 years prior.
I'll stop it there. Wow. See, he wasn't just saying that. He truth to power.
Dropping some. He was so spot on, it wasn't even funny. But obviously, the internet just lost their mind when he said that. You know, if you look at some of the, especially on the pundits, Fox, they were going to explode.
They were like my thing is,
heads are just going to start popping.
Been calling him the N-word since he took office, and now they got a problem with him saying it in actually good context that should be used in. It's ridiculous.
Honestly, if I had a dollar for every time somebody's called the president the N-word, and literally in major, all over the place, and now he uses it and it's a controversy, okay. Check.
But it was ridiculous, some of the things that these people were saying. Like, there was one specifically lady on Fox, black lady, she said, or maybe it was CNN, but she said, well, now this is going to give others permission to say the word because Barack Obama said it. Really?
Really? Because they didn't need permission before, so why did they
really
need permission?
Right, yeah, exactly.
And I still have yet to ask. I really like these white people that use it, and when I want somebody to come, why do you want to use it so bad? What is the fucking obsession with it? It's like, I don't even understand.
Yeah,
I don't understand. I don't get it. I just it.
Well, you know, my opinion on that is.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
White people, you cannot use the N-word. No N's in G-A, N's in E-R. Not one of my friends. And, oh, they can use it, but we can't. Stop. You're done. You can't use it. No.
And if you don't know, now you know.
We interrupt our program to
bring. You can't, white people. Don't do it.
Don't do it, white
don't
people.
Don't do it.
I'm right there with you. I don't understand what the infatuation of that word is. Is it just lack of creativity?
It's the taboo.
Is that what it
is? Yeah, I was thinking about
the taboo. Like, y'all need that too? Like, what the fuck? Yeah, when is it enough for you people? When is it enough?
Never. We're necromancers. We're consuming everything.
It's so crazy. Like, stop. You have everything. You need that too. You need the N-word too.
And look at the etymology and the history of it. Like, it's this horrible. Like, more violence and death has been used in the name of that word from white people that created, invented it, and hurled it at and upon black people. And over, series of time and circumstances, the black community has begun to own and possess some of that word to the point that white people are like, oh, take it back. I can say it too. It's so gross.
I think it was either Chris Fett. I think it was Chris Fett. He said, like, it wasn't like he came out and was like, what's good, my niggas? And I was like, actually, I would have loved him to just come out there and be like, what's good, my nigga? Like, that would have been hilarious. It reminds me of when Trinidad Jones and Mark Lamont Hill were on CNN. And they were arguing about, you know, of course, because this is like a new thing. This whole year I've been seeing, like, who should say the N-word? Can everybody say the N-word? Like, these big headlines on CNN or whatever. And Mark just, like, went on this epic tirade. He was like, I can say what's up, my nigga, to Trinidad because he is my nigga. And that is never going to change. So that's the difference. Like, he totally just, like, went nuts about it. It was so funny because he's usually so, like, you know, buttoned up and well-spoken and shit. I was cracking my shit up.
It's a little crazy that the desire for people to want to use it.
It's weird. It's just weird.
Yeah, I just don't
get it. And to get mad at Obama for saying, and I'm not equivocating when white people use it, but like, first of all, President Obama didn't just say it, but he said it in the one, like, it's as a almost a descriptive objective form. Do you know what I'm saying? It's
right,
like,
yeah.
You know, so this person said, and then you're using the word. Like, I still wouldn't use it in that way, but
he didn't even do that. He wasn't quoting anybody.
No, I'm not saying it's quoting anybody, but he was using it in a referential way, meaning just because it's no longer polite to say, it wasn't, he didn't call anybody, he didn't say what's up.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, if you're going to get upset at somebody using the N-word in a capacity of, like, you know, more objective and descriptive fashion, it sure as hell shouldn't be the president of the United States who's black. That's just absurd. And he was doing it in the context of white supremacy and about what that means. It was like, I can't believe you're mad about that.
And surely if you're going to get mad at him, you have to get mad at the other 40-plus presidents that have said it prior to him in the White House.
And not in the context of trying to say not to say it either.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Sorry, not sorry, basically.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right.
We should go on to, it's still all kind of race heavy, but it's better stuff. That did you see the privileged poetry slam? This came from
I haven't seen this.
It was associate producer Carl.
So good.
All right, so I'll play it, and it's a white woman and a black man, and it's a poetry slam, and there's a visual component to it, and they're standing in front of two mics, and they're going to start, and then they're going to switch, and they're going to tell the same. They're going to speak, but they're going to be using the other person's words. So they're going to switch, and the white woman will be saying the black person's man's experience, the black man's words. Right, Carl? Got it?
Yep, exactly. Okay. Yep.
Here it goes. They just switched.
The first day I realized I was black, it was 2000. We had just learned about blacks for the first time in second grade. At recess, all the white kids chased me into the wood chanting slave. My mother said I refused to come out for 3 hours. Said she thinks I was lost in the trees, but I just needed to be closer to my roots.
As a woman, having a boyfriend is a battle. If 70% of us are abused in a lifetime, what is the number of men doing it? The answer is not one man running faster than light to complete a mission, and that is what leaves me sick.
The second day I realized I was black was in a gas station. I only had 25 cents, so I searched what to spend it on. The cashier floated from aisle to aisle, eyes fixed on my hands. That was the first time I realized skin color was a crime.
My body has become cause to write legislation, cause for ass smacks in the back of a class. My body has demanded everything except respect. I've been asked, what makes you feel unsafe? And I struggle not to yell.
Everything. The third day I realized I was black was in an all-white cafeteria. I gathered my legs under me, made rockets on my feet, and approached a girl. She told me she was not into my type of guy. I felt the words shoot daggers into my melanin. I have never wanted to disappear so bad.
As a woman, I've learned to answer to everything except my name. Little lady is not said to mean equal, but to make sure I remember my place, I battle between wanting to own my body and accepting there is a 1 in 4 chance a man will lay claim to my skin, a plot of land for the taking.
The last day I realized I was black was in an elevator in California. To the white woman that told me she knows what it feels like to be black because she grew up poor,
I would tell you to think before you speak, but your mind
mine has got to be bacteria infected, and any filter through that labyrinth of nothingness might be worse than no thought at all.
There's a group of women going around the room sharing their personal definition of feminism. He is the only man in the room, and all of a sudden, the tone switches to destroying the patriarchy by annihilating all men.
Do you know what it feels like to be black? To pop lock your way in and out of hugs, it is not a problem you want to sympathize.
But to tell me you know my pain
is to stab yourself in the leg because you saw me get shot. We have two different wounds, and looking at yours does nothing to heal mine.
Never will I turn away an ally.
But when a man speaks on my behalf, that only proves my point.
Movements are driven by passion, not by asserting yourself dominant by a world that already puts you there.
You speak to no pain, you only fathom because we told you it was there.
You know nothing of silence until someone who cannot know your pain tells you how to fix it. Every day is a crucifixion, when there is no regards for lying. Cross.
I fight so my voice can be heard. I fight for the voices you silence, all in the name of what is right.
The problem is you assume this struggle is attached to a social class. I am black and bold and beautiful by nature. Ain't no income that can change that.
The problem with speaking up for each other
is that everyone is left
without a voice.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, it was excellently done. So for listeners, when they switched and the black man was speaking with the white woman's story, the white woman would mouth the words. So it had a neat sort of dramatic effect as well. They were doing it back and forth. They were mouthing each other's words.
It was like somebody was taking their words from them.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It actually goes back to what you were talking about earlier, Drew, which is that, you know, white people shouldn't tell black people how to feel or do or what to say. And it is a little bit of that, like, you know, don't try and give somebody else's narrative. I also feel like it does a disservice if you truly are, and I don't even like the word, but let's say you use it, if you truly are an ally to whatever cause you're an ally, if you're a man who, you know, is an ally to the feminist cause, or if you're a non-person of color that is, you know, identifying with the Black Lives Matter cause or any cause, really, that doesn't include you by definition, you know, you have a truth to speak. It just isn't from the perspective of those that are directly affected. And when you don't speak those truths, it does a disservice to everyone. So that's my feeling.
And the very first thing I ever wrote immediately after Mike Brown's death was to that end. I called it white privilege myopia, that we're, you know, the centering on whiteness and all these various things that we do. It prevents us from having a view. You know, our lens is so narrow, myopic, that there's just no possible way as a white person to have any sort of full understanding of what it's like to be black in America. You just can't. And I think the Baltimore Orioles coach said it best at one point. Someone's like, what advice do you have for the black kids in Baltimore? He's like, nothing. I have not been black. I am not currently black, nor have I ever been black. So I have nothing to say about black citizens of Baltimore. It's like, end of story. And I said the same thing, and, you know, immediately after Ferguson, Mike Brown's death, just as a white person, I'm not going to in any way ever tell a black person what and how they should feel and react, because I can't. And to your point is, well, Leslie, like as an ally or whatever you want to say, I think it's one of those things that white people in particular don't always get. And because we're so used to centering on ourselves and thinking about ourselves, like, it just, again, we go to meetings and we go to various places. It's not every time, but if there's an individual taking too much time, asking too many questions, white, you know?
Right.
If it's a person who's asking a question and didn't get the exact answer that confirms their opinions, biased or not, and reframes the question hoping to get a different answer, white. You know, like, I'm not saying that, like, these are horrible, horrible things. It's just, you know, we're not very aware. And that's why I think a lot of times you hear just, like, listen. Don't speak. Just listen. And then there's an odd, you know, people take that almost too much to heart. And, like, well, I'm not supposed to talk at all. I'm like, well, you can talk to the white people. You can, like, talk to white people about it. You don't have to, like, shut up entirely. Like, you can have a voice. Yeah, just don't speak over people of color.
I was going to say, yeah, you're spot on. I'll share a conversation that I had. So I have friends here in Chicago, very similar to you. The husband is white. Wife is black. And I went out with the husband. We're at one of my favorite places, Caesars, obviously. Killer margaritas. So we're talking, and, you know, we kind of got into this conversation about race and all this stuff. And I'll never forget this. This is probably the most impactful thing that this individual's ever said to me, and I have the utmost respect. He's like, you know what, Carl? I have no idea what it's like to be black, but all I can do for my wife is listen and try to understand.
Yeah.
And, I mean, but you have to realize the context. He is from Wisconsin. Mm. They were farmers. So I wasn't expecting that to come out of his mouth. But when he said that, I was like, that's it. Yeah. That is, in a nutshell, if I had to explain it, that's it. You don't have to be me. You know, you don't have to live my experiences, but just listen to what I say and take what I say is truth. You know, don't try to disclaim it. Don't try to rephrase it. Just listen. That's it.
Mm. True, true. It was Crystals from The Read that said, country-ass white boys got two modalities, dope as hell or evil motherfucker.
That's right.
One extreme or the other.
Dope, but she did say that.
Dope as fuck or evil as hell.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, you know, let's lighten things up a little bit here. We have some heavy stuff so far, but I ran across this thing that says white people who tried really, really, really hard to be black ranked.
So we're talking about, like, entertainment, public figures?
Let's see.
Okay.
I think this was just recently updated. Just came out today.
Like Justin Timberlake, Robin Thicke, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see what happens here. So from Rachel Dolezal to Colonel Sanders, American history is filled with examples of white Americans adopting and appropriating black culture so aggressively that they started becoming kind of, sort of black themselves. It's kind of like how my mom used to tell me that if I ate too many bite-sized Snickers, I would turn into a bite-sized Snicker. Basically, they turned into bite-sized
consumption of blackness again.
Yes.
Consumption.
Nom, 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 nom.
So we'll start with late 90s to early 2000s Justin Timberlake.
Yes, although, I knew he was on that list.
Although he seemed to be, back to regular whiteness now. The JT from 15 years ago practically wrote the white boy guide for co-adopting blackness by following the black R&B artist script to a T. He, one, went through an awkward cornrow phase.
Yeah.
Number two, helped Timbaland finance his multi-state Costco membership. And number three, won the support of black women and then threw a famous black woman under the bus when shit hit the fan.
Wow. Ouch, is that spot on?
Yep. Yeah.
Golly.
New entry to the list.
That threw said black woman under the bus. I didn't even laugh at it, but that's so true.
Mm. Yeah.
New entry to the list, Rachel Dolezal. The turducken of post racial ridiculousness.
Turducken of post racial. Stop it. They fucking wrote that. Who magazine did this? Who is this?
It's Very Smart Brothers. I'll have the link on it. The turducken of post-racial ridiculousness. Perhaps the biggest takeaway from her saga is how it proves black hair makes everyone, even aggressively plain white women, better looking. Yay, black hair. Number three is Gary Owen. Is it fair to put a white comedian on this list just because he's only funny to black people who like no other white comedians?
I hope I'm not
because he only appears in black movies Netflix recommends when you rent Soul Plane. Yes, it is.
We saw his most recent, I guess, HBO. I don't know much. One of his comedy specials. Watching it, and the first a lot of comedians do this. The first 10 minutes are like skit, right? It's not quite the stand-up comedy routine. It's like
the intro. Sketch. Whatever. Yeah, sketch.
Right.
And that shit was kind of goddamn funny.
It was funny. We're like, this is going to be great.
It's really good. And then he came on. I was like, what?
Stand-up was terrible.
It's terrible. Anyway. I should have given more time.
Yeah, but we couldn't. It was like, coming in next is Randy White Chocolate Gill. Although he's somehow only the second most famous white basketball player nicknamed White Chocolate, streetball veteran Randy Gill stands alone in his commitment to desperately attempting to be black. Without giving you too much context about why he deserves placement on his list, just think of a grown-ass white man dressing, looking, and acting like a character Fredo Starr would have played in 1997. Drew has no idea who Fredo Starr is, so we'll leave it at that. Look it up, Drew.
I'm all good.
Coming in next is Snow. When did we all collectively decide to forget that a white reggae rapper from Toronto had a number one song in 1993, 1995, 1997, 2002?
All right, dude. I couldn't find the off button.
It happened the same year we also decided to forget his name as an acronym for Superb, Notorious, Outrageous White Boy.
It is? That's what Snow was?
Yep.
Superb, Notorious, Outrageous White Boy. Mm-hmm. Snow. I didn't know that.
Okay. Coming in next is Iggy Azalea. There's nothing to say about the Australian Ali G that hasn't already been said. She's been humbled and humiliated enough, and I actually hope her and Nick Young have a beautiful wedding at a remote exotic locale and have such a great time they decide to stay there forever. Coming in next, we got Elvis Presley. He rocked a gallon of pomade in his hair, was obsessed with footwear, and had loose hips. If this don't scream white man want to be black, I don't know what does. And if you include how Presley made millions doing and saying the exact same things black artists have been doing for years for pennies and pre-owned Cadillacs, Elvis Presley equals John Stewart.
That's the consumption again. Yes. Necromancy.
And coming last, we got John Howard Griffin and Ray Spriegel. Do you know who they are, Drew?
I do not.
They are two journalists who decided to, one is wrote Black Like Me. They went and did their escapades on.
I remember Black Like Me.
Yes, white writers, bloggers, journalists please don't attempt this today. But after reading and researching about these two men who underwent skin transformation so they could write about being black, made me wonder why more people don't do it today. But don't try it, y'all. Don't. No. Which then made me wonder if there actually are some people doing it today, but they're so deep in disguise that they fooled us into thinking they're actually black, which then make me look really, really, really hard at a picture of Teray. Oh, people always got to shade Teray. Wow. That's the end of the list. Pretty good list. Good list. Good
that's
list.
Pretty good, but yeah. I'm gonna play something.
What are you playing?
I got to go back.
What are you?
You know, a lot of people talk about racial prejudice.
This is Eddie.
And some people have gone so far as to say that there are actually two Americas, one black and one white. But talk is cheap. So I decided to look into the problem myself, firsthand, to go underground and actually experience America as a white man.
Yeah, Eddie. Back when SNL actually did good shit.
I hired the best makeup people in the business. If I was going to pass as a white man, everything had to be perfect.
I think that's a little light. Okay, let's try this.
He's got to put on a white mustache.
I look kind of Harry Reams-ish. I like it.
I studied for my role very carefully. I watched lots of Dynasty.
See how they walk?
Their butts are real tight when they walk. They gotta keep their butts tight. I gotta remember to keep my butt real tight when I walk. And I read a whole bunch of Hallmark cards.
My lovely wife. You always mean lots more to me than you could ever guess, for you have done so much to fill my life with happiness.
Finally, I was ready.
His butt's so tight.
So tight.
He's really walking white as hell.
What are you doing?
I'm buying this newspaper.
That's all right. There's nobody around. Go ahead, take it. Take it. Go ahead. Take it.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, take it.
He's done. He doesn't know what to do. He's like trying to back out the door.
Slowly I began to realize that when white people are alone, they give things to each other for free.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Oh, so funny.
Eddie.
Eddie
is things
great.
To each
they
other
give
for
things
free.
To each other for free. Really funny. So one other thing that came out, Francesca Lee, shout out to her. She has a new series on MTV, on YouTube's, MTV's YouTube channel called Decoded, where she talks about race relations and things related to race. So she had
this is
her
an
newest one come out today. It's called 13 Things White People Take for Granted. So I thought it would be fun to listen and talk about these things that they say white people take for granted. Here we go.
Sure thing a white person can buy.
So the thing that the gentleman is holding up is a coffee mug, a black coffee mug, that the handle is the handle of a gun. Okay.
As a person of color, there's actually a huge array of products and activities that are just not for you.
It's a white, white, white world, and we get to live in it.
You basically won, like, the racial lottery with that lack of melanin.
Here's a few things white people take for granted.
Like flesh-colored Band-Aids that actually resemble flesh.
Yeah, that's irritating when you're a kid. In fact, you know what's funny? I was a kid. I didn't actually realize that Band-Aids were supposed to not look like they were on you. Because of course, they don't look like
yeah,
that
exactly.
on black people.
Way.
I was like, oh, they're meant to show, like, oh, look, highlight your cut so people know not to touch it and you remember it's there. And then I realized, I was like, it's supposed to mask it? It's supposed to look like nothing's wrong with you? Okay.
This is a nude bra.
I don't even think I know white people that are this color.
This is the darkest I could find.
So Jessica Lee is doing concealers, which is
I flunked out of algebra twice, and everyone was shocked. That's racist.
White people can change their hair, and surprisingly, no one feels the need to touch it.
They just creep in real slow, and I'll be like, nope, I'm doing Bruce Lee karate up in here. I'm in Trader Joe's.
Another thing that white people totally take...
What is it about the grocery store? That's exactly where I always have to, like... push white people's hands away from my hair, too, is at the grocery store. Like, I don't know you. Why do you think you can touch my person?
For granted, they can own gun-shaped things.
This is a gun-shaped flash drive. Gun-shaped knives?
It's already a knife. Why is it shaped like a gun?
Like, if I point at see, that's weird. Like, that, I could tell that was uncomfortable for us.
I would totally get shot if I was just putting this right into my MacBook Air.
And white people get to be on money, as if we don't see their faces everywhere else.
They call them dead presidents, but some of these guys are just dead white guys. Like, this guy? Who is that? President number... nothing.
All we have is a Sacagawea coin.
It was a big splash, and then it slowly started disappearing, much like... the Native American population.
Wizards, dwarves,
being in Lord of the
elves.
Rings.
Not one single Korean in the whole film.
There's room to throw in, you know, like, I don't know, a Latino hobbit. It would be fun. Their cuisine would be so much more dynamic.
White people can have full length arguments with cops.
Oh, are you shit. Out of your mind? Did you not see me out the light? You crazy son of a bitch.
I knew a dude who messed up a handshake
so
Spanish
That's
guy.
Kid Fury
and a move
too.
Out of the neighborhood. That didn't really happen, but it sounds like it could have.
Hey, this is comfortable. No one's going to shoot me.
Indian is not a language.
They get on the dance floor. It's charming when they look stupid.
This is what privilege looks like on a white person.
Are you a white person that takes things for granted? Do you feel like this video took you for granted?
Anyways, I'll put the link in up there. That's pretty funny, though. I do think that there's a problem, especially with the Lord of the Rings thing. It's like all of those like super, you know, sci-fi epic things. That's always, guess the future never has black people in it.
Right. What happened to us?
What happened to us?
Where do we go?
Yeah,
you didn't make it to New Zealand.
We didn't make it out there.
Right.
For Mordor or whatever. Is that it? That's Lord
Mordor?
Of the Rings.
Mordor?
I think so.
Something
so.
Like that.
Something like that. Mm. No, but full-on arguments with cops? Yo.
That's you.
I've been there, done that, got like 7 of them t-shirts. So bad. The one I know I told on the show about the one with my buddy Ty at the airport was like slow clapping. That wasn't quite with the cops. But I'm at the airport. And you know how the cops come and like knocking on the window or they come with their cars. Like you can't park in front of the... terminal, you have to go park in the cell phone lot. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
so they come around. If you park in front of the pickup or the baggage claim, you got like 4 minutes through the hazards on
before
four cops like, yeah. keep it moving. So I'm in a big line of cars. There's like 15 cars. And I see the cop on foot behind like, you know, 15 cars back. And I'm like, I got at least another like 30 seconds before he tells me to move. And I wanted to text my mom and say, hey, I'm going to be in the cell phone lot. Like, you know, they're making this move. So I'm in the middle of texting and he comes rapping on the window with his nightstick. And I'm like, I kind of like brush him off with my hand. I'm like, okay. And he says something more like, you know, like, come on, you got blah, blah, blah. And I'm not even kidding, dude. And the window's like partway down. I turn around. I'm like, I'm trying to find a fucking text. I can't drive and text while I'm doing the same time. I got to the text. I came to the airport. And he just looks at me. He's like, buddy? I'm like, oh, you're right. My bad. I got to go. That's like. Wow. I don't even know what he said, but he said something that was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I was like, I'm going to go. You know, I'm sorry. But literally, it was like, I'm trying to send a fucking text. I can't drive a text. Like, I got all mad at him. I was like, I'm going to go. It's my cue.
It's my cue. I'm going to just,
deuces.
See you now. See you. That's it. So, Drew, you said, I heard you laughing the other day. And I was like, what are you laughing about?
It was just, there was a thing, you know, it was like shit you sent on Twitter, like best blah, 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 blah. It had comebacks and only, I would say one of them was pretty good. So I'll just read that one. But so it's on Facebook and it's a guy that said, dang, I hope Mrs. Johnson is at the reunion. She was the best teacher, my favorite of all time. And he lists the high school, which I'm not going to read. So then somebody, Thomas, says, yeah, I had her too. And then Larry comes in and says, what the fuck? That lady was your favorite, your favorite teacher. She a bitch because of her. I had to take 2 summer school. Okay. And then next comes Mrs. Johnson from said school on Facebook. Ms. John says, sadly, I will not be able to attend, but thank you all for inviting me to the group. Larry, I'm sorry you feel that way. Obviously, my grammar lessons didn't take too well. So then someone comes in and goes, oh, laugh my ass off. Burn. Go, Mrs. J. So then Larry comes in, W/ever. I couldn't say it and has, so I say it now. You are a B-I-T-H-C. Okay? So then Ms. Johnson writes back, says, Larry, you can barely say it now. Also, you could have said that in high school because B-I-T-H-C isn't a real word. I'm going to use my contextual clues and assume you're attempting to call me a bitch. In that case, I will point out that your Facebook information lets me know that you're currently single and unemployed. Who's the bitch now?
Wow.
Mrs. Johnson. I don't know who that Mrs. Johnson is.
Mrs. Johnson.
At CHS, but get she it. Fucking killed it.
Hilarious.
There's a couple other ones that said, it really makes my heart smile when two ugly people find each other and fall in love. One of her friends wrote, who's the lucky guy?
That's funny.
So then someone said, my dick so big it goes from A to Z. One of the friends wrote back, check your keyboard, which checks each other. So this is actually pretty good too. Someone writes, it's obviously because it's a screen cap of this person's message service. It's to this person's brother, and they say, how was your flight? And the response goes, this is his girlfriend. Who are you exactly? Why are you texting him? Angry face. Writes back, okay, first of all, stop calling yourself his girlfriend, in quotes, to make yourself feel better than the other girls. We all know you ain't official, so don't flatter yourself. Second, I'm the girl that can make you go from ex to girlfriend to ex real quick. Now, how was my brother's flight, bitch?
She's salty.
A little bit, a little salty.
Wow.
Someone was talking about, I guess this was on like a TV show, the Mighty Something, British show. It says, oh, I love globes because you can never remember where all these countries are. Like, I didn't know that Nicaragua was next to Costa Rica. Have you guys heard of Nicaragua? Yeah, we were schooled in England.
So it's American. That's funny.
Yeah. Let's see here. Oh, I couldn't possibly be happier right now. For the first time in my life, a girl told me that she loves me. Someone wrote back, moms are great. there's probably more, but we'll put the link up.
Excellent. That's funny. That's funny. We are podcasting this week for What's the Tea. Nick Jew will be with us, one of the co-hosts, with her other co-hosts. Well, Nick Jew will be on here July 15th on the Interracial John, but you can listen to her show, What's the Tea. You can find it on Podomatic, iTunes. It's on Stitcher. You can find it. It's really great. It's her and her co-host R to the Edgy, Reggie. It's a comedy podcast hosted by two best friends who share a brain, a love of food, and all things outrageous. This week's show was called Coup de Cata, and it featured one Leonard Brothers, and it was extremely hilarious. They talked about a whole bunch of stuff, and it's a really good, funny show. So if you like the read, you'd love this. And really any podcast, that they're just really hilarious. They just talk about TV and all sorts of crazy shit that goes on in Z world. And we look forward to having Nick Jew on the show. What else, C Money? What's going on with you?
Nothing much. Well, pretty exciting time for me. Just finished up grad school. So,
Do a ding for that, dude.
I know. Tell me about it. So I don't know what I'm going to do with all this extra time that I'm going to have to read entire books and write 20-page papers all the times.
It's exciting. But, exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. But that's about it. But I was going to ask you, what shows are you guys watching? I know you talk about shows sometimes.
Shit is on hiatus.
Everything is on,
dude,
fucking hiatus. So
nothing new on right now.
Shit on right
American
now.
Ninja Warrior, which is stupid.
You're not watching Mr. Robot?
No, I heard it just... We missed it last night, so we'll have to watch it in reruns tonight. Or
what
on channel
is that on?
It's on AMC, is that right?
Yeah, I think we got that. It is fantastic. So I watched the pilot, and it was really good. I didn't get a chance to watch last night because I was doing something
else. Wait, there's been two episodes? I thought last night was the premiere.
There have been two episodes.
Oh, shit,
so
Drew, we behind.
Dang.
You can catch the pilot, but it was really good.
Have to check it
and
out.
And it's because I'm kind of in that industry, so it's
world.
About a hacker and things that are going on.
I saw
on
a bunch
them,
of my tech friends being like, they use real C++ code. Like, they were all excited because they were like,
oh, yeah.
Very,
yeah,
like, you know, legit in their portrayal of the world. And I also know that it got picked up for a second season already, so that's reason enough to watch it, quite frankly. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. And are you watching Penny Dreadful?
No, lamentably, we don't get Showtime anymore in the middle of this season. But you know, I'll probably end up buying it or renting it or whatever once it's released later on. Yeah,
we'll make it happen.
I'm going to highly recommend that. This season is 10 times better than last.
Yeah, I mean, I was caught up until we moved, and it was really good. I was telling Drew that it had been really good. So I maybe I'll just iTunes it while I'm away or something.
You certainly can, my love.
I probably should. Yeah, that's it. That's all we've been watching. Sense 8. Did you watch that?
Love it.
I haven't started
Netflix,
that yet.
It's good. Yeah, it's really good. I would definitely highly recommend that. And then we're just like catching up on a few things. Like we're catching up on Arrow. We hadn't watched that before. So we're in the second season of that. So we've been using up a lot of our time doing that. And we're behind on Orphan Black, which hasn't been that great this season. But
if you're listening, your man crush, Tay Diggs. We're not watching it.
Murder in the First.
No way. I'm not gonna I know she listens. I gotta be careful now. I was like almost inappropriate. She's like out of nowhere. Like, oh, and Tay Diggs.
I love Tay Diggs.
We weren't talking about Tay Diggs.
Nobody was talking about Tay Diggs, Mom.
Good to know. Mom's type is
Tay Diggs type.
Tay Dibs.
Tay Diggs.
Tay Diggs, who has no idea how to use the internet.
My God, he follows everybody on Twitter.
He's the most following blue dot on the history of the planet.
I went to his timeline the other day because somebody had retweeted something of his, and I looked at his timeline, and he had five or six, I guess you can Twitter video now, videos, and it was each one's only, there's a max, I guess, 20 or 30 seconds, but it was just very discordant. It was imagine having a 1.5 minute I'm getting up in the morning, I'm gonna make some cornflakes, I'm gonna need a coffee, but then doing it in five separate videos.
He's got an audience. 30 seconds. Your mom would watch it, just saying.
She do like Tay Diggs.
Well, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you, associate producer Carl, for being with us. You guys can't all follow Carl on the interwebs. Tell everybody where they can find you, Carl.
Let's see. I'm on Facebook, so if you just look for Carl Marr and
You're giving the government name. Easy.
Look for the Lando.
I'd go Twitter only on this one, buddy.
but you are on Twitter, and you're a prolific Twitterer.
Oh, yeah.
He's part of the Twitter
I only tweet you guys, really. I need to step my Twitter game up.
Yeah, get
I
in
really
it.
Only tweet you guys.
Get a little dirty in there, but it's Carl Marr 3. It's Carl M3, right?
Carl M3.
Yeah, exactly. And also strong on Instagram. Like to check that out as well.
He does do the gram.
Do it for the gram.
And I'm going to say...
I do it for the gram.
All the dozens and dozens of people that are listening to Carl. He's now his second time on the show. He's the associate producer. He's going to come on a couple more. This is a good time to give a review, because if you got shade, throw it at him. Oh, I love the John, but fuck this Carl. Like, you can do that. I'm just, if you want to.
Have we had anybody else on the show twice?
The show.
No, you're the first. You're the first repeat.
Double
repeat
guest.
Wow.
Sloppy second, Carl.
True, you are terrible.
Dress like Carl.
All right, I think that's the again. You can find
hashtag
us.
Dress like Carl.
Dress like Carl. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John J A W N. You can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack M A C, and you can find that dude at Very White Guy.
And that's it.
Good night, everybody.
High five.
High five.